Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is The Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated, and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Hello and welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. I hope you have had an amazing week, and if you are joining us for the first time, as I'm sure many of you are, thank you so much for choosing to listen to us and give us a try. Hopefully today will be a very special day in so much as you will learn things about your diabetes that you never knew before. And there's a good chance of that, more so even than many shows we do, because today is going to be a day with some of the highlights from the past, and we've got four different great men who really know their stuff, who really are able to give you some great insights into your diabetes, be it type 1, be it type 2. If you're a bit of an old timer, you've been listening for the full 4 years that we've been doing this, nearly now, certainly that's gone quickly, and well, what a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. Many of you will probably have been diagnosed in that time. Maybe you've been diagnosed for many, many years, and you come here to pick up on some nuggets of information from my guests, who are always a fount of knowledge. So please do sit back, enjoy the show, enjoy the music we play, enjoy the interviews that we do, and of course at the end, hang around and listen to the next show. UK Health Radio is full of amazing shows to listen to. Have a look at their schedule. Go to the app or to the UKHealthRadio.com website. And you can see the schedule there, and you can see a list of all the presenters and all the different radio shows. And I believe there's over 40 now different shows per week, with a great listenership. I think, if I'm correct, I'm thinking that it's about 1.3 million listeners per week. Not just to my show, that is, and that's to all the shows. But every single listener we have to the show, we appreciate. So thank you so much for joining us. As I said earlier, if it's your first time, or if you've been coming for years. So sit back, put your feet up, and enjoy the show. We're going to listen to a song now, and the song is going to be... the reason I've chosen it is because for many people, and as I said earlier, probably a lot of you are listening to this for the first time this week. A lot of people do find their diabetes a bit of a mystery, particularly when they're first diagnosed. It's a mystery as to how are they going to live. It's a mystery, what should they eat? What exercise should they do? What do all these figures mean, these numbers mean? If you've got type 1, then it's, it can be a real mystery as to how your body reacts to certain situations. And hopefully, the interview extracts that I'm going to be playing later on will help unravel some of that mystery. It's not going to give you all the answers. After all, these are only little tiny snippets from the main interviews. But the good thing is you can go back and you can listen to all those previous interviews in their entirety, and you can then have a much better picture. So that's the idea. We're going to get the mystery taken out of your diagnosis of diabetes so that you are in control of living with it. Before we get into the interviews, we're going to listen to a song. It's by a band called Status Quo, and the song is called Mystery Song. Enjoy.
I took your hand.
That was Status Quo and Mystery Song. You are listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. My name is Peter Alton. Thank you for joining us today. And if you didn't hear earlier on, today we have got four special guests on the show. All of these are little snippets of interviews that we've had on previous shows, which I felt would be most valuable to you as a listener today. Hopefully, if you really find something useful from either one or all of them, then go back and search for the previous shows in the on-demand section. The first person up today is Dr. David Cavan, who is a leading diabetes consultant with over 20 years of experience. He also was the Director of Policy for the International Diabetes Federation previously. He is also the author of Reverse Your Diabetes, Reverse Your Diabetes Diet, and most recently, Take Control of Type 1 Diabetes. He's a good friend of mine, and I'd like to welcome David to the show to share a little bit of his wisdom now.
So David has a real passion for helping people with diabetes. And David, one of the things I wanted to ask before we get into the main sort of nuggets of advice for people is just a little bit about your journey in your career, because I think it's pretty fair to say that you have sort of swayed away from general medical procedures and practice regarding the management of diabetes, and that must have been quite a brave move, maybe.
Quite possibly. Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me for the kind introduction. As you said, so I've been helping people manage their diabetes for a very long time now. In respect of type 1 diabetes, quite early on, I could see that actually I and those around me, other people, were doing a very good job in helping people manage their diabetes, and I very quickly became convinced that the real key is actually helping people learn how to manage the condition themselves. So I developed a focus on developing education programs, helping people manage their own condition. And over the years, with the advent of new insulins and new methods of monitoring, I think, you know, we've made great advances in type 1 diabetes. So that was a focus of my work for a very long time. But then, in respect of type 2 diabetes, which of course numerically is by far the bigger problem in mm-hmm. terms of the numbers of people who are affected, over the past 15 years now, there's been a number of new drugs that have come along, each with their own promise that, you know, this is the one that's going to really make a difference. And to be honest, I thought this is great, this is exciting, we embrace the new drugs, we prescribe a lot of them. But I found that all too often, a year later, people were back at square one. And that's when I, probably now 7-8 years ago, began to think beyond just medication, beyond the traditional way of treating it, that looking at other ways where I could help people with type 2 diabetes manage it. And yet, it at the time was really quite unconventional, especially for a doctor to be yeah. taking that approach. I think now it's becoming more accepted. But I never look back, and the results I've seen in helping people change their lifestyles for managing type 2, but actually increasingly now type 1 diabetes, has been far better than any of those drugs.
Great. It's really been amazing what yourself and people like Roy Taylor and Michael Mosley have done to actually bring that to the forefront, to be able to realise that actually we don't necessarily always have to go down the medication route only.
We don't, and in terms of type 2 diabetes, what has become clear to me is that, you know, the medications, they just treat the symptoms, they don't actually deal with the underlying cause. And what I learned in the work that I did for the International Diabetes Federation is that across the world, you know, it's now becoming clear what the causes are, and the causes of type 2 diabetes are very much related to our modern day lifestyles. And unless we can address that, we're just going to be treating the symptoms.
Okay. So that brings me to the fact that there's a lot of confusion, I think, in the world of diabetes, particularly amongst patients, possibly sometimes amongst professionals as well, but certainly amongst people who have diabetes. And this series of interviews I want to do on the radio is really going to be all about trying to help the listeners here to be able to bust up or mash up some of the myths around diabetes. The second myth I want to talk about is type 1 being more serious than type 2. And I wonder if perhaps you can tell the listeners the differences and similarities between why the blood glucose, rises in type 1 and in type 2, and therefore from that point of view, why it's more short.
So in type 1 diabetes, there is a lack of insulin. Insulin is a hormone that controls the level of glucose or sugar in the bloodstream. And if you don't have insulin, then the level of glucose rises. And part of the seriousness of diabetes is the effect of that those high glucose levels on the body, causing a number of different problems in the feet and the eyes and the kidneys and so on and so forth. So that high glucose arises in type 1 diabetes because there's no insulin. In type 2 diabetes, you get the same problem of high levels of glucose in the bloodstream, but very often it's not because the body cannot produce insulin. Often there's a high level of insulin. The problem is the body cannot use insulin effectively. And so although the body is producing insulin, the blood glucose level still rises. It's as if the body becomes immune to the effect of insulin. And so type 1 is sometimes sort of more serious because you need insulin injections. Mm. You'll have gathered in type 2, because there is insulin and that's not the problem, insulin injections is not probably the ideal treatment for type 2 diabetes. We can perhaps come on to that later on. So because you need to inject insulin right from the beginning in type 1 diabetes, then in some way you could think it is sort of more serious. It often occurs in younger people, so that is, if you like, more serious. Mm. I think what I would say is they're both potentially very serious conditions, because the corollary of that is if type 1 is a serious one, maybe type 2 is the milder form. And often that's what people are told, it's a milder form of diabetes. But as you will well know, type 2 diabetes can be just as devastating as type 1. You can, with type 2 diabetes, get exactly the same complications. They're actually both potentially serious conditions.
Yeah. I think one of the things I would add to that as well, my own experience of the patients that I see, is that type 1, you've got it, or you die. Type 2, you can live with it for 10 years without even knowing you've got it, and all the time it's doing that damage.
Absolutely right, and globally it's estimated that up to 50% of people with type 2 diabetes just don't even know they've got it.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything about it because you don't know.
That was Dr. David Cavan, and thank you, David, for your thoughts there. Next up on the show is Professor Roy Taylor, the man behind the Newcastle Diabetes Reversal Diet, a real pioneer of this whole concept, but actually you don't have to live with type 2 diabetes, you can reverse it. And personally, I owe it to him because it was the Newcastle diet that I followed, which helped me reverse my type 2 diabetes.
We're going to take a quick break from the show now, so please don't go away. It's just time for our station sponsors to share a message about their product. Please hang on, and we'll be back in just a minute to continue the show.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Galar Light is the quantum energy emitted from the universe, from the sun and stars. Now, Tom Palladino, a humanitarian and Scalar Light researcher, has created the world's only Scalar Light healing system, a system that can bring long-distance healing and wellness to humans, pets, and plants via a photograph. Get your free 15-day trial now at scalarlight.com or click on the Scalar Light banner on the UK Health Radio website.
Shields like masks are top of mind right now. But did you know you have inner armor working constantly to protect you from pathogens? It keeps you healthy and thriving. It's your immune system. Ion Gut triggers the body's natural ability to support gut strength all year long, so your immune system can protect you when you need it the most. How are you treating your inner armor? Visit uk.ionbiome.com to learn more. Ion Gut. Protect what protects you.
UK Health Radio, the the station that makes you feel good.
That was an ad from our station sponsors. You're listening to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. So thank you for listening, and let's continue with the show.
Roy, thank you for joining us on the show and for sharing some of the things that you are most well known for and things that can help our listeners incredibly.
In a nutshell, what is the Newcastle diet all about?
Well, in order to test the hypothesis that I was able to develop in 2006, because I suddenly saw that type 2 diabetes was a simple matter of fat building up in one organ, passing on to another organ. And if that was really true, it should be possible to reverse those cycles. And because there were twin cycles, we called it the twin cycle hypothesis. So I devised the diet as a feasible way of getting people who are going about their ordinary everyday life to suddenly reduce their calorie intake. Now, I had to invent something that would be acceptable, that would actually work. And I decided to use 3 200-calorie shakes per day together with non-starchy vegetables. Now, life's not all about metabolism. And of course, we've got to keep our bowels. Constipation isn't very unpopular. And that's why the diet was constructed like that. So that's a Newcastle diet. And it was a diet in order to be a tool. It was merely a tool to test the hypothesis. Much to my utter astonishment, the people undertaking the research said they actually felt good on the diet and they liked it. And the problems only came at the end of the diet. So that led us to develop other ways of using this. But the basic idea of using a low-calorie approach to losing weight over a short period of time is the Newcastle diet. Basically, I would describe it as a 1-2. First, lose the weight. Second, keep it off in the long term. Now, that does fly in the face of conventional wisdom. We've got to lose weight slowly because otherwise it isn't durable. That's completely untrue. We have many myths in medicine and especially about food, but the Newcastle diet is just an approach to reducing calorie intake in a feasible way for a distinct period of time, then working at keeping the weight level.
Okay, and that's that's the difficult part, possibly, the actual keeping it at that level.
It is challenging, but the interesting thing, Peter, is that it's not quite what people think. Because if we look at the graph showing weight, yes, it does tend to drift upwards over time, but it's not the case that everyone's finding it difficult to keep that number of calories down every day. What actually happens is that people hit life events. The number of times people hit major events, such as losing their job, having to move house, illness in a relative, bereavement, illness in their pets, the cat's got leukemia, all of these events really make it very difficult to continue to concentrate on just eating reasonably every day. And what is happening is that people fly off at various points, and it gives this impression that we're struggling. Now, of course, in the real world, we have to deal with that. But I think recognizing this and recognizing that the 1-2 approach to losing weight is much more feasible to get people to change their state. Because we're not talking about a few pounds of weight. You know very well yourself that we're talking about a large amount. In our studies initially, we were talking about 33 pounds or 15 kilograms weight loss. Now, that's much more than people usually talk about. But we need to grasp the nettle. We need to get that amount of weight in order to make a transition back to a normal metabolic state.
Remission or reversal? That's one which comes up in all the forums all the time. Can you say you've reversed your diabetes, or should you say you've put it in remission? What's your take on that?
The term reversal comes from the original work on the twin cycle hypothesis. And I described these twin cycles that were spinning, vicious cycles that caused the diabetes. I pointed out that if we could get them to spin in the reverse direction, the diabetes would be reversed. That's where the term reversal comes from. And so, yes, it has real meaning. I would use the term reversal out of preference for another reason as well, because it doesn't imply any time predictions. If someone has reversed their diabetes and got back to normal, that's here and now today.
Yeah.
They need to keep their weight off if it's going to stay reversed. Yeah. Now, the term remission is often used in other diseases, and so you might have leukemia, you might get remission from leukemia, and that's good. It sort of implies you're expecting it to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, to me, that gives a negative slant on this field, although, to be absolutely fair, it does underscore the importance of daily, weekly, monthly checking that your weight is remaining steady. So either term is entirely acceptable. You know that direct includes the word remission in its title, and that underscores this this choice. So go out and try and reverse your diabetes and achieve remission. We can put them into the same sentence.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. That's my thoughts exactly on that one. Quite frequently, I get asked by people whether I think they should try the Newcastle diet. I think you've sort of covered this a little bit in the previous questions, maybe. But is it your view that anyone with type 2 can benefit, however long they've had it, etc.?
Yes, with some caveats. There's a possibility, there's always a chance that the type 2 diabetes may return to normal. The longest duration person that I know of, having achieved this, had their diabetes for 24 years and was on tablets and has gone back completely to normal. However, there are one or two people who only had their diabetes apparently for a short time who don't completely go back to normal. So we know that on average, if you've had it only for a few years, you're more likely to respond than if longer term. But if a person has type 2 diabetes, as we said before, they've become heavier than their own constitution can cope with. They've become too heavy for their body. And they will feel better. They will feel 10 years younger if they lose the weight. Their blood pressure will be dramatically reduced. Their fats in the blood, the lipids in the blood, will also improve. So there are wider aspects to well-being than just reversing the diabetes. Even if a person doesn't manage to reverse it, if they feel much better from day to day, if they have a lower blood pressure, if they're taking less tablets, for instance, or even no longer taking insulin, then that's a major advantage, even though they may still have the diabetes. So it's possible for anyone to benefit from this approach. But winding it back even further, there's a very basic point that I wouldn't want anyone to try this unless they were very clear in their own mind that they personally wanted it. There's got to be the motivation to do it. And so I wouldn't want to mislead people into saying, this is, you know, it's easy. Decide to do it. It's like deciding to wear a red shirt. You know, you just do it. That's fine. Well, no, this is something that requires planning. It requires support from the family. It requires a lot of effort. And if people really dislike their diabetes enough, they're likely to succeed. But the vital ingredient of motivation, I think, is worth flagging up at this point.
Thank you for that, Roy, and for all your hard work helping people with diabetes. Next up on the show is Patrick Holford. Patrick is a world-leading nutritionalist, and he is the author of, I can't remember how many books, dozens of books. And his latest book We had him on the show talking about it not many weeks ago, actually, called the hybrid diet. A fascinating, fascinating concept, which I intend putting into use in my life going forwards in a way of managing my weight, managing my health going forward. So, Patrick, welcome to the show.
I work very closely with Britain's award-winning medical journalist, Jerome Bowen, and he got very interested in all the evidence coming in for high-fat, very low-carbohydrate diets, which also work for reversing diabetes. So you can reverse type 2 diabetes either by eating a low glycemic load or low GL diet, which basically means less carbs and eating the right ones. So oats, not cornflakes, and berries, not bananas. And there's a few other principles, like always eating protein with carbohydrates. So if you have some nuts with some fruit, it will lessen the blood sugar effect of the fruit. So you can do it with low GL, but you can also do it with a diet where 70% of the calories come from fat and you have very little carbohydrate. Both work. And we started to explore why we have these two mechanisms of making energy, one from glucose derived from carbohydrates and the other from something called ketones, which the liver makes from fat. And what we started to learn was that the body's actually designed to go through a cycle of, we could call it feast and fast or feast and famine. So in the old days, or most of our evolution, we would have had a lot of carbohydrates in the summer, you know, when the fruits are growing and the grains are growing and so on, probably would have grown a bit in weight as well, stored it as fat. And then in the winter, when there's less carbs available, we would have had some level of fasting or famine or slaughtered a goat or whatever and ate a diet higher in fat and much lower in carbs. And when you do fast, so if the body does go into a very low food phase, it switches on a process inside the energy factories of cells, which is called autophagy, which basically cleans up all the mess. So we started to realize that we've got these two engines, one to run on carbs, another to run on fat. But most people, of course, have only been running on carbs. There's been no famine. It's endless feast. And their carb engine is all messed up. And their ketone engine hasn't even been unwrapped. It's sort of shoved somewhere in the basement. And as a consequence, the carb engine is all inflamed, not working very well. So the hybrid diet talks about how we have these two processes. But then the most exciting thing of all, which is called the fasting mimicking diet, is that there are a lot of benefits associated with fasting. It's reversed a lot of disease processes. But we started to explore why fasting works. And it's because when you fast, you burn your body fat, which means you start to burn ketones, which is called ketogenesis. And actually, you can get not only the same effects as fasting, but possibly even better effects by eating a slightly lower calorie but ketogenic diet for a period of 5 days. And this is called the fasting mimicking diet because you don't actually fast, but it does mimic what happens in your body when you fast. And one of the experts in this is a man called Professor Walter Longo over in the University of California. And he has done some extremely good research showing that if you eat, for example, a low GL diet for most of the month, and then you have 5 days on this high-fat ketogenic diet, it starts to reverse disease processes. And that's the kind of absolute leading edge. And that's what he was doing with animals that enabled their beta cells in the pancreas to actually regenerate and start producing insulin again, which of course is an extraordinary possibility.
So in a nutshell, it's basically somebody goes on to this low GL diet, but they intersperse it with what, every other week? Or
well, Yeah, let me explain that. So the first thing is the book shows that there are benefits. There are two ways you can, for example, lose weight, reverse diabetes. One is a low GL diet, which is explained very clearly. And if that's what you choose to do, that's great. We get fantastic results long-term, people losing, you know, a stone a month, 9 stone, 9 months, diabetes reversal, heart disease reversal. It's effectively what I eat. So you can say, I like the low GL diet, I'm just going to do that. There are other people who are very married to a high fat, very low carb diet, and also feel fantastic and do that. There's a lot of people who don't want to only do that because it means, you know, you never eat bread, pasta, rice, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's fine. If it's okay with you, you know, it's absolutely fine. But some people, they don't want that, you know, restriction forever. It's quite tough to do that very long term. So the compliance in studies long term is not nearly as good as the compliance in the low GL type diet. Now, if you wanted to, you know, for a specific reason, sort of maximize sort of cell renewal, anti-aging, et cetera, then there's this idea of switching. We do not honestly know yet what the perfect sequence is. But for example, you could have 5 days every month where you go ketogenic. And that's pretty much what Professor Walter Longo has shown. He takes people who are sick through 5 days ketogenic a month, lower calories during those 5 days. And he does that cycle 4 times. So that's kind of where that research is looking very strong. I do something else. I do, and again, I don't do this all the time. It depends a little bit on circumstance.
This is you personally?
Me personally. What I've been finding very good is to do an 18-hour complete carb fast. So what this means is that I have dinner at 7 and I'm not going to eat again a meal until 1 o'clock, so lunch at 1. That's 18 hours. And also for dinner, I'm going to use some sort of pulse bean or lentil. And the reason for doing that is we know that it drives down blood sugar and insulin. And generally, if someone eats a dinner with a bean in it, their blood sugar spike of their breakfast the next morning will be less. So what you ate in the meal before affects your response to the next meal. Now, what I do in the morning, because obviously if you're not eating, you wake up hungry, is in the morning I have a hybrid latte. Let me explain this. Generally, I'm not a fan of lots of coffee. Coffee gives you energy, like a bank loan gives you wealth. Okay. However, we do know that coffee speeds up going into ketosis. So I have a half a shot of coffee. I have some carb-free almond milk. All Pro are advertising this all over London at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I have something called Keto Fast. I'll explain in a minute, or C8 oil. It's a subfraction of coconut oil. I have a tablespoon of that. I have a big blob, like a dessert spoon of almond butter. I have a teaspoon of cacao, raw sugar-free chocolate, in effect, a sprinkling of cinnamon. I whiz it up in my NutriBullet. I could have it cold with ice. I could have it hot and warm it up. I actually just have it warm from the coffee. It's completely filling. It has no carbohydrate. And it's a piece of cake to have a hybrid latte in the morning and then not eat until 1 o'clock. So what that means in this context is every day or every day that I do it, it could be every other day, for example, I've actually got an 18-hour window of zero carbohydrates. And what we're starting to learn in the hybrid diet is the more often you switch, the more metabolic flexibility you have. So, for example, very often when someone goes on a ketogenic diet for the first time, and by the way, it's a lot easier to do if you learn how to eat low GL first and then you switch. Mm-hmm. It's not like going cold turkey. And what they find is they feel pretty rough for the first couple of days. And then their body switches over into ketosis and they start to feel fantastic. Plenty of energy, no hunger, etc. But that's kind of like, it's like the first time you're cranking up the ketone engine and turning off the carb engine. But the second time you do it, it's much easier. And the third time, it's no problem. So you get more metabolically flexible. And it seems that it's this switching that actually helps health. In other words, it's not moderation, but variation that is the key to health.
We're going to take a quick break from the show now, so please don't go away. It's just time for our station sponsors to share a message about their product. Please hang on, and we'll be back in just a minute to continue the show.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
How good are vitamin C supplements? Usually only a small proportion of vitamin C actually reaches your cells and has a positive effect. Whereas the high absorption levels of Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C help maintain optimal vitamin C levels in your body and strengthen your immune system. Now get 10% off when you choose Goldman Laboratories' liposomal vitamin C capsules. Just quote 10 off at goldmanlaboratories.com.
Do you suffer from pain? B-Cure Laser, a home-use CE-approved medical device for the effective treatment of pain, is now available in the UK. The results of a double-blind trial has shown that B-Cure Laser offers a significant reduction in pain compared to the placebo group. To get your special B-Cure offer now, call free on 0808 501 5122 or Google Radio Pro London. B-Cure Laser. B-Cure Laser.
The station that makes you feel good.
That was an ad from our station sponsors. You're listening to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. So thank you for listening, and let's continue with the show.
And finally, the final guest on the show today is a man who is a dear friend of mine. He is really an influence in my life, incredibly. I'm a podiatrist, as most of you will be aware by now. And Dr. David Armstrong is a podiatric surgeon from over the pond in the United States. And David is somebody who is passionate about salvaging people's limbs when they are really in a bad way, trying to help them so they don't end up losing a lower limb or losing a part of their foot. He's not just passionate about that, he's also passionate about raising awareness globally. He's always flying around the world talking at various conferences, and when he's not doing that, he's on social media sharing information about things to do with diabetes. So, David, you are an inspiration to me and one of the reasons that I really did get off up my butt and get on with launching Undefeated and doing my bit to help raise awareness of diabetes and prevent amputations. So, David, thank you for joining us on the show, and we look forward to hearing some of your gems of wisdom that you're going to be sharing.
All right, so just the other day I saw this guy called Jim, okay, and Jim had lost sensation, but not only that, he had some quite risky areas of hard skin. He hadn't developed any wounds that would need your services at that point, but he had got these areas of skin, hard skin, which were really, really a problem in our eyes. But in his eyes, because he couldn't feel them, he'd got no concept of that risk at all.
Yeah.
We obviously told him that he was going to be at higher risk, but what would you say? I guess you see people at the other end of the scale, but in your mind, what do you think would be the good thing for us to be able to say to that a person like that?
Yeah, wonderful question. We see people at all ends of the scale. We certainly see people at very, very end stage as well with enormous problems, but for Jim, I would say thank God you're here, because of course we would want to explain what those hard areas of skin are. You know, you were alluding to it, that you are an expert yourself in taking care of these. Don't sell yourself short on that end. and you, as you know, many of the complications of diabetes, and especially diabetic foot, we compare them to a kind of a cancer in many ways. And as you know, when someone has had an amputation, their mortality is worse than most forms of cancer. When they have a wound, their life is also shortened in many cases, like a cancer. They have a doubled 5 or 10 year mortality rate, based on a number of studies. And when people have something like this, like you mentioned, the gym has, there's also sort of a cancer analogy. If you want to think about it, you can allude to kind of like a breast lump in breast cancer. Breast lump is a sinister problem that's about to happen, potentially. It might not, but it's a sinister problem that might be caught by a breast exam, a self-exam, or an exam by a clinician. So yeah. Too, what you're mentioning on the feet, these hard areas of skin, calluses, can be just like breast lump. And that is a coming event that's casting its shadow, if you will, beforehand. These are wounds that are about to happen in a person with diabetes, especially if they have neuropathy. So a callus to someone with diabetes and neuropathy is the equivalent of a breast lump to someone who has, who may be at risk for cancer. Make sense?
Makes sense. It's powerful analogy. And I suppose what doesn't make sense is the fact that if somebody found a lump on their breast, they're probably going to hot-tail it down to the doctors quickly, whereas if they've got diabetes and a callus.
I think about this all the time, Peter. But again, let's remember, the gift of pain. Now, you might say that a breast lump is also painless, but maybe we can learn from that because often it's painless. But we have done a great job in public health sense of educating the public about that and about the importance for this. Maybe we need to take a lesson from that. And I don't think you need to take a lesson. There's very few people that have been spreading the word around the world like you have, Peter. So you know what? Good on you, man.
Snap.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. What would you say are some common causes of, let's say, the wound occurring, other than just general deterioration of the circulation, maybe? But
yeah, so all kinds of things, but it's usually just a few things that cause a wound in someone with diabetes. And it's not just the circulation. The circulation plays a role, but it's not the primary role in how someone develops the wound. The real primary role is in the face of neuropathy, in the face of the loss of the protective sensation, it's pressure, meaning force per unit area, and activity. So that's, if you want to talk about an equation, it would be pressure times activity equals inflammation and ultimately a wound. So we can play with inflammation, we can play with activity clinically, medically, surgically, mechanically to try to help people and help people help themselves. But what causes most of these? Well, pressure could be a single one-off high pressure event, like a nail going through the bottom of a foot and a shoe. That happens. It doesn't happen. It happens fairly frequently, but not anywhere near as frequently as the next way, which would be repetitive moderate stress, often on the bottom of the foot, that also leads to that inflammation and then the skin breakdown. And the third way would be just by low-grade pressure over a very prolonged period of time. For instance, if one were laid up in bed and got a bed sore, that's the third way that someone could get a foot wound. So those three, generally speaking, other than burns, are the most common method. And you can mix them up, and very often they're mixed together in some etiologic kind of puzzle that we unravel. But typically, that second one of the ones I said is the most common.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I think of it being like a almost like a perfect storm of problems, and then there's just something which it just tips over.
Yeah. Well, there you are. That's true as well. I think and I think everyone has that threshold over which they have failure of their tissue, right? But one thing that does tend to happen, especially for people that have that repetitive stress, is they often get, especially if they've healed and gotten better, often they have that callus that tells us that it's a coming event that's casting its shadow before. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just go straight through, get a blister and then a wound, or sometimes they step on something like a nail or something sharp, or you mentioned a dog's tooth could go through that's gory, or it could be just the bed sore, which is the other end of the spectrum, the very low-grade pressure.
Wow, what a privilege it is to have been able to talk to all four of those amazing human beings, all of whom are passionate about helping people, helping you to control your diabetes better, to live safely and healthily with, or hopefully without, the disease. I hope that from those little bits that you heard today, it will prompt you to go and listen to some of the full interviews. And as you do, I think you will become more and more aware of who you are, more and more aware of exactly how you live with your diabetes and the potential possibilities of what you could do to control it better. So we played the song earlier on, the mystery song. Hopefully you're in a little bit less of a mystery situation now. You know a little bit more about where you are and where you need to be going. And that's pretty much all we've got time for this week. I don't get to play another song, but I just want to really just encourage you, if it's anything at all that you did hear during those interviews with those four great men, then please do check out the rest of their shows, which are also on UK Health Radio. So this is the Diabetes Show. You can find all of the back editions of it. There's 70 previous shows that we've done prior to this one, and you can find them all by going to either the UKHealthRadio.com website, or you can go to www.bit.ly/diabetesradio. And if you do that, you'll come to my page with all of my shows on there. You have to scroll down. Your first six are loaded. You scroll down, get the next six, scroll down, get the next six. And you'll find a description of who's on the show and what we're talking about. So you'll be able to find those ones. Some of them were quite early on, so you have to do a bit of scrolling there to find them. Anyway, thank you for listening this week. I hope you have a fantastically happy Diabetes Week. I hope it's a game changer for you, that this show actually has been a changer for you, that you're going to actually make some changes in your life as a result of it, that you're going to be better off. You'll be closer to living in that diabetic sweet spot that I so often talk about. And I look forward to having you back on the show again next week. And that's it for this week, folks. You have been listening to Peter Alton with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. All that remains is for me to be able to say to you, have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetic sweet spot, living the ideal diabetic lifestyle. And I look forward to sharing with you again next week. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.